Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
If the God of the Bible really exists, I would go gladly to hell. And anybody happy to go to heaven to worship such a creature is morally bankrupt.
It is because God's wrath is real that his mercy is relevant. Unless you have a real wrath, the biblical concepts of mercy and of grace are robbed of their meaning.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's all the rage.
Let's go talk about the book we all read.
Books, you know they're dangerous.
Take a look, it's in a book.
So many books, so little time.
Especially when you have a long opening. This is Wretched Radio, the book that is all the rage. It is being reviewed by everybody who is anybody. It is written by one Rod Dreher. He happens to be an observer of history and our current culture. He happens to be a Roman Catholic. He happens to write for the New York Times, and he has a brand new book titled Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents. That's right. Typically, we think about dissidents in places like Russia, Eastern Europe. That's where Christians are being persecuted. It is the opinion of Rod Dreher, who is widely respected for his observations, stating, oh no, it's coming our way. In fact, you can look forward to a soft totalitarianism coming to America. That's the case that he tries to lay out. Trevin Wax reviewed the book, stating he makes a pretty powerful case, although he believed it was a rather pessimistic outlook. Furthermore, Trevin Wax, who has spent a fair amount of time in Romania as a pastor a number of years ago, said that totalitarianism, when there's a void, doesn't always get filled by the people who are on the far left. It can also be filled by those on the far right. Wherever there's a void in nature, it'll be filled. And in this case, it doesn't always get filled by people who are socialists or communists. It can be those who are fascists on the right side. Nevertheless, I also thought that Tim Challies did a good critique that is instructive for us, not just in the culture, but in the church. That's right, in the church. Today's special word is progress. We see a lot of it, don't we? After all, you want to be on the right side of history. Got to make progress. We're progressives with the assumption that everything progressive is good. Tim Challies, in his review of Rod Dreher's book, cites that as one of the modus operandi of people who are trying to change the culture. So permit me to share with you the Tim Challies review of the Rod Dreher book, Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents, and let's see what we can learn about progress, not just in the culture, but in the church. From Challies.com, Dreher believes that America has entered into a pre-totalitarian condition in which it may not take much for a fully fledged form of totalitarianism to overtake the nation. This is unlikely to be the familiar hard totalitarianism of the former Soviet Union. They used armed revolution, government control, gulags way out in the hinterlands. But this is going to be a soft form that will take on a guise of gentleness and concern for the marginalized. We need to change everything in this country because there are people who are hurting and our current systems aren't getting the job done. Therefore, because our hearts are filled with compassion, we're going to burn this thing down.
I was just thinking, you say gentle.
That is the gentle revolution, although increasingly, are we not seeing, is Louisville not our latest example of the people who are trying to be so compassionate to those who are marginalized, are willing to hurt a lot of people? Nevertheless, compliance to its ideals will not be enforced by the state or a dictatorial strongman, but by the small group of elites who form public opinions, in other words, the cancel culture, and large corporations whose technologies have become deeply embedded in our lives. It will not be merely authoritarian, monopolizing political control, but fully totalitarian, demanding conformity to every aspect of society, to its controlling ideology. We're seeing that, aren't we?
Yep.
Businesses are the new power center in our culture. Businesses, which used to just kind of hope that the government would get off their backs, all willing, it seems, to participate in the overthrowing of a society. And they can use much power to do it. Did you want to be hired here? Did you want to get a raise here? What's your ideology? Did you take the class? Did you read the book? Did you state that you are on this side of the issue? If not, for instance, this will be something that will be very practical. Vaccinations. Let's just say the government mandates a vaccination for COVID. Let's just say this is an exercise in demonstrating how businesses can exert power. How do they enforce that without giving you a ticket or arresting you? See, the government might not want us to be looking like the bad guy in that regard. So how can they get everybody to take the vaccination? Businesses. You don't get to come to work. Where's your paper? We need to see your, you got to have your signed doctors that you put the needle in your arm. And so businesses can exert a lot of power, furthermore, through technology. What it is that we learn, and we're seeing that, are we not, with things like Facebook?
Yep.
Google machines that only pop up certain articles, bury others. To do what? To control people's thinking. But we now get into a little bit of history in these progressive movements from Challies. If a new form of totalitarianism is emerging, might we be able to identify its approach by studying past regimes? This is a history, a really 30,000-foot view from Russia and Germany. 20th century totalitarian regimes seem to be present in 21st century America. So what happened in Russia, what happened in Germany, appears to be happening here. Widespread loneliness and social atomization. It's true, isn't it? We've got Facebook. We were told by Mark Zuckerberg that's supposed to be our community, and yet people are increasingly lonely. A declining faith in hierarchies and institutions. Anybody digging the government these days? A growing desire to transgress and destroy, paging Louisville. Ubiquitous, and it's everywhere, propaganda and the willingness to believe useful lies. A mania for ideology and a society that values loyalty more than it values expertise. Identity politics, anyone? There's another similarity. Just as it has most commonly been the intellectuals who have been the revolutionaries, sure enough, in our day, it tends to be the middle-class, college-trained elites who are at the forefront of social justice thinking, messaging, and advocacy. The 20th century totalitarian experience shows how a determined and skillful minority can come to rule over an indifferent and disengaged majority. How do they do that? They are able to overthrow the majority even as they are the minority, and they use two means to do that. And that's going to bring us to our word today. Rod Dreher believes two factors will play especially important roles in the rise and dominance of soft totalitarianism. Progress. They use the word progress. You gotta make progress. It underlies social justice ideology. It's all been bad. For 400 years, it's been bad. We need to change it and make some progress. And so the P word is used to undermine society, because if it's not on the cutting edge, if it's not about tomorrow, daddy-o, it's yesterday's news, and it's bad. Because the assumption is progress is always good. And it's not, of course. We know that. You need a standard. You need some sort of a measuring stick to determine, are we really on the right side of history? Doesn't matter, because propagandists will tell you progress is good. And it sounds like it, doesn't it? I mean, you don't want to be stodgy. You don't want to be old. It seems like you're not very hip. You're not very cool. And after all, there's got to be a better way to do everything. from Challies, reviewing Rod Dreher. The myth of progress teaches that the present is necessarily superior to the past, and that the future will inevitably be better still, a time in which there will be total equality, defined not by equal opportunity, but by equal outcome. It provides a transcendent source of legitimacy for their actions and frames opposition as backward and ignorant. Is that not what is happening precisely in our culture today? That the progressive social justice movement would look at people who are thinking that ain't the right way to approach the issue as being backwards and dumb and really stupid. Being on the right side of history demands ceding to the ideology. For to join is to work toward a better future, while to resist is to remain trapped in an oppressive past. And aren't those who stand against a better, more equitable future unjust? And shouldn't the unjust be marginalized or even eliminated? That is what happened in other cultures that became totalitarian. It appears to be happening in ours. However, is it possible that the same battle cry of progress is being used in the church? Next on Wretched Radio.
Thanks for joining us here today. You know, we always appreciate you choosing to spend part of your day with us here at Wretched Radio. We would also appreciate if you were able to find some time in your busy, busy schedules to visit the Wretched website, wretched.org. Wretched's website has some amazing content available, like full 30-minute Wretched TV episodes, full 60-minute Wretched radio episodes. Our Wretched store contains over 40 amazing resources like Jesus Unmasked, Drive-By False Teaching, and Don't Stub Your Toe. The Wretched library is where you can find a whole bunch of topics ranging from abortion to pneumatology to marriage to evangelism. You can also visit our donate page and become a gospel partner. Without the support of our listeners, there would be no Wretched. So if you're not already a gospel partner, would you please prayerfully consider becoming one? We can't do this without you. You can find out all of the information on becoming a gospel partner at wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Just spend some time on the telly with Dan Steiner of preborn.org.
Neighborhood pastor's daughter ends up pregnant, and she was very abortion-minded. She's very much not wanting to face the consequences of her indiscretion. And she met her baby on the ultrasound. She just wept uncontrollably, just couldn't do it.
For just $28, you might be providing a free ultrasound for a pastor's daughter. It does happen. And even that daughter can consider taking the life of her child, confused, not wanting to face consequences, scared, pressured. An ultrasound will persuade them, no, I can't take the life of my baby. $28 per ultrasound. May I ask, how many might you be able to sponsor per month? Would you please consider doing that? You can do that at preborn.org/wretched. preborn.org/wretched.
Suicide, typically an uncomfortable topic to talk about, but it's one we need to talk more about because it's the third leading cause of death among Gen Zers. This generation has the highest reported levels of clinical anxiety and depression than any other generation at the same age. Today's youth need help, and that's why Wretched has come out with our newest booklet, 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide and 13 Reasons Why You Should Live. Find your copies right now at wretched.org/13. This booklet targets the heart of anyone struggling with the issues of depression, anxiety, and suicide. You may not realize it, but you know someone who's dealing with these issues right now. And 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide will provide them with the biblical answers for the struggles that they're facing. Find your copies right now at wretched.org/13. Give these booklets away to someone who need hope. wretched.org/13. That's wretched.org/13.
Important dates in Christian history. 387 AD. Augustine of Hippo is converted. His writings became bedrock for the Middle Ages and were influential in the Reformation. The Confessions and City of God are still read by many. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
wants to learn from a dead guy?
I do. This is Wretched Radio. Not a dead guy we typically quote here on Wretched Radio. George Friedrich Hegel once said, quote, "The only thing we learn from history is that we learn nothing from history." Well, that's pessimistic, and it is contrary to what you are probably taught in school. The people who fail to study history are doomed to repeat it. Not according to Hegel. He said there is nothing we can learn from history. What does that have to do with the price of tea in Texas on a Tuesday? A lot. Because today, according to many social observers, our culture does not desire to teach history. They don't want kids to learn what happened in the past because some observers believe the agenda is to blot it out so that we can create a new progressive future. In other words, ditch everything that has been done in the past. All of it, because we want to be on the right side of history, and progress is always good. According to Rod Dreher, who has written a new book concerned we Christians, we're looking at a soft totalitarian regime, citing the two tools that he believes that people on the liberal side tend to use to change a culture. And that is hoisting the flag of progress. It's always good. Everything about what we're doing now is better than what was done in the past. Tim Challey's reviewed his book, and he says, this is how totalitarian regimes justify actions that further their control. And this is the way social justice quickly becomes more than an ideology, but an alternative religion that to succeed must stamp out its Christian competitor. Because we're old school. We're not cutting edge. Why? We stand in opposition to progressive ideologies in culture.
We believe in history, too.
And you believe in history because you believe that there's something to be learned and that we stand on the shoulders of dead guys. Now, that is our culture. That is what is going on, people believe, in our world. I think it's pretty obvious. But here's the question for you. Is it also happening in the church? Is the ideology that progress is always good been embraced by evangelical Christianity? And I would like to make the case for you that it absolutely has, starting with the seeker-sensitive movement. This isn't your grandma's church, don't you know? We need to update church. We need to update the faith. We need to update the way that we preach. We need to get rid of the Bible. We need to update the Bible. We need a cooler version. We need to make sure that it's understood by people today because we like progress. And therefore, we jettison the old. And I can't help but see a similarity between what the world is doing and what we're doing inside of the church. Let me share with you a quote from another dead guy. This one, better. In a letter to Robert Hooke, 1675, Sir Isaac Newton wrote, quote, "If I have seen further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants." In other words, if John Newton has made a contribution to Christianity, helping us love the Lord more, cherish his word more, it's simply because he stood on the shoulders of giants, people who have come before him. He didn't jettison them. He stood on their shoulders. Did he embrace everything they taught? No. Did he recognize that history happens in time and that there are different contexts and there are different considerations? Yes, he got that. But he did not jettison everything like we're doing these days in the church. That is why all of your cherished, whether it's liturgies, Bible studies, clothing for that matter, music.
Canceled.
All of it's gone.
Throw it out.
We got to have the new stuff, Daddy-O. Now, do we have to stick with the old? That isn't the point. The point is that we don't just casually toss it all out without stopping to think. Did dead guys think? Didn't they study the Bible? Did they not have the Holy Spirit too? This from Feeding on Christ. An article titled The Shoulders of Giants and the Council of the Wise. When Rehoboam ascended the throne, You remember the story. It's a great one. And if you ever want to use a historical narrative to perhaps point younger generations toward the wisdom of the older, this most certainly would be the story. Rehoboam became the king. Solomon died, and he sought counsel from two groups. Now, Solomon, the wisest man in the world, he'd been taxing people, and they didn't like it. His son, Rehoboam, comes along, and he seeks counsel from two different groups regarding taxes. His father's elders and his young friends. And his father's elders said, don't be raising the taxes there, son. Just slow your roll. The people are feeling it, and if you pinch them too hard, they're going to yelp. By way of contrast, his friends said, tighten the screws. Give it to them.
There's the pressure.
Show them who's in charge here. And Rehoboam listened to the latter. And the nation was divided because in came Jeroboam, because they were, people were miserable, unhappy, and they didn't want to pay taxes, and they didn't want to follow Rehoboam. You can read all about it in 1 Kings chapter 12. He abandoned the counsel of the old, and he took counsel with the young. And rather than listening to sage advice, to people who understood something of history, he went with the cutting edge. He went with progress. There is a lesson to be learned here. And that is not that we don't care about progress. Of course, people want to make things better. Of course, we want to stay with the times because we are living in this world, just not of this world. But we have opened up the doors of the church and progress has come flooding in. It has overwhelmed our ecclesiology, the way that we do church, the way that we think about church. We dress to match the culture. We remove, for instance, and I'm not making it a law, but we remove pulpits and put plexiglass tables in front of it instead. Now, I'm not saying that's a sin to do so, but why did we make that change? What was wrong with a pulpit? If you've ever preached, I got to tell you, having a pulpit with a little bit of an angle, it's really helpful. Now, these days you put a table. They are not as efficient for the preacher, and yet we put them there. Why? Well, because we don't want people
to think.
It's trendy. Well, the pulpit, too, it's kind of authoritarian and it seems old school. So let's just look a little cooler. That's progress, Daddy-O. And I wonder.
But at what cost?
That's exactly the point. Dead guys know something. David and Solomon, though themselves especially endowed with wisdom, governed their kingdoms with the help of wise advisors. The more there were of such advisors, the safer the people were. And yet today, take a look around your church. How many gray hairs do you see sitting in front of you?
Well, you sometimes come to church, so.
I got a few.
I see.
I got a few. I got more than Phil Johnson. Phil Johnson. I'm telling you, that man's got to be dying his hair. I'm just telling you. He's got to be dying his hair. It's unbelievable. It's like thicket up there. It's like the underbrush on top of his head, and he's still not gray. Nevertheless, look around. How many seniors do you see? Where do they go? It seems we don't want them. We tell them your music is fuddy-duddy. We tell them we don't like the way you get up too early. You do the church service too long. You don't use the right instrument. We don't like it. Now, again, this is not to say you can't make changes, but it is to say, are we seeking the wisdom of the wise? Are we seeking them out to say, hey, why did y'all do this? Are we going back in time to discover why decisions were made? The piece of advice from Feeding on Christ. Ministers, and this goes for all of us, must first be men of the word, poring over the Bible. Pastors, then, must be men who diligently search the annals of church history, giving careful consideration to the theological formulations of the early church. What about the writings of the church fathers? Were they all stupid? The medieval scholastics, there are things to learn and things to not learn from them. The pre-reformers, the reformers, how's about the Puritan, even some pietists? How's about the 1900s? There was some brilliant work being done. J.C. Ryle, one of my favorites. We can learn from those people. And before we commit the crime that our secular world is committing, even as we speak, by indoctrinating society to say all things old, we're not going to study them, we don't remember them, we don't care about them. We've got to make progress. And they use it as a tool to introduce totalitarianism. I wonder if it isn't being used as a tool by progressive people inside of the church, not to usher in totalitarianism, but to usher in liberal theology, different views of the Bible, and perhaps even if it is not wittingly, a different gospel. We can learn from dead guys. And as we look at our culture and go, they're not teaching the kids history these days. Let's not commit the crime of Hegel. And let's not commit the crime of our world. Let's dip back into the deep well of dead guys and learn from them. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I am Jimmy Hicks. In a sick and twisted butchering of scripture, the biblical story of Jesus saving the woman caught in adultery has been given a new ending in a Chinese textbook, with Jesus killing the woman and telling her that he too is a sinner, according to a new report. The textbook in question is published by the government-run University of Electronic Science and Technology Press and is used to teach professional ethics and law in vocational schools, according to the Union of Catholic Asian News, which first reported the controversy. In the original biblical story in John 8, Jesus goes to the temple courts where the teachers of the law and Pharisees bring him a woman caught in adultery and ask Christ if she should be stoned. Jesus writes on the ground and then tells them, "Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." After the woman's accusers leave, Jesus tells her to go now and leave your life of sin. It's a beautiful picture of grace and mercy by Christ, but the Chinese textbook twists and changes it to disgusting levels. The textbook says when the crowd disappeared, Jesus stoned the sinner to death, saying, "I too am a sinner, but if the law could only be executed by men without blemish, the law would be dead." A Catholic parishioner uploaded a copy of the textbook story to social media. Some Christians are saying China changed the story to prove that the rule of law is supreme in China, and such respect for law is essential for a smooth transfer to socialism with Chinese characteristics. A priest in Asia said the distortion is against morality and the law, so how can we still teach professional ethics with this book? It's a sad social phenomenon in mainland China. President Donald Trump vowed yesterday to sign an executive order to protect all babies born alive, including those who survive abortion. In a pre-recorded address, the president said protecting life is our moral duty. He said, quote, "Today I'm announcing that I will be signing the Born Alive executive order to ensure that all precious babies are born alive, no matter their circumstances, and that they receive the medical care that they deserve." The president also noted that his administration is increasing federal funding for neonatal research to ensure that every child has the best chance to thrive and to grow. Further details on the executive order were not immediately available from the White House, but the announcement quickly drew praise from members of the pro-life community. And speaking of pro-life laws, more than 130 medical professionals have signed a letter in support of a proposed late-term abortion ban for the state of Colorado, which will be voted on in November. Known as Proposition 115, if passed by voters, the measure would ban abortions after 22 weeks into a pregnancy, with the exception for life-threatening medical emergencies for the mother. The open letter, officially released last Friday, states that there is no doubt that the 22-week fetus is fully alive and fully human. To qualify for the ballot, pro-life advocates had to get at least 124,632 verified signatures in support. They wound up getting more than 153 confirmed signatures. Amen to that. More Wretched Radio is still to come. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Books of the Bible. 2 Samuel tells about King David's reign over Israel. Even though David was a man after God's heart, he still gave in to temptation and suffered bitter consequences. Yet David repented of his sin and was forgiven by God. Remember, there is only one perfect and faultless king, Jesus Christ. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Teach me, O Sensei. This is Wretched Radio.
You've been watching Cobra Kai?
I'm talking about you.
Oh, me.
Last night, you led youth group.
Oh, I did.
At your church, and you taught lesson 2 of Road Trip to Truth. And I want to learn what you discovered, because it was a little bit of a, a kind of a test run of a great curriculum that we prepared with Road Trip to Truth Season 1. Have to make that distinction already because we're pretty much halfway down the road with Season 2. Nevertheless, you are using the curriculum that Dr. Dana Snead of Answers in Genesis put together for us. You've also been editing it and working on it and working through it to massage it to make sure it's really good for youth pastors or for anybody who's teaching youth. Or frankly, this thing could be used for adults. The kids that were sitting there, 6th grade to 12th grade.
Yep.
That's a wide swath of kids right there.
It is.
And the lesson 2, I remember it. It was Mike Riccardi, the whippersnapper, who just had his birthday. By the way, this is very exciting. Not only this kid, Mike Riccardi, did he have a birthday? He got his driver's license. Very exciting for Mike. That young is what he is. And a phenomenal preacher. If you've never been turned on to Mike Riccardi, R-I-C-C-A-R-D-I, he's the bomb diggity. He was in that lesson, and it was about postmodernism.
Yes, can we all be right?
And did the kids fall asleep?
No, they ate it up. I mean, tons of questions. And even the 6th graders are so engaged in this content because they're seeing this in the schools.
I know it.
Maybe not in the schools quite yet, but they're seeing it amongst their friends. And look, I brought up postmodernism, and we're talking about it, and they didn't realize, oh, I've seen that. I mean, didn't know the word postmodernism, but that's how people believe.
Yeah, that's the kids that I talk to on university campuses, when I typically ask them, are you a postmodern? They'll say, I don't know what that is.
Then you explain it and they're like, oh yeah, that's me.
Yeah, that's what I am. And when you explain to them that societies tend to embrace a particular way of filtering life and reality, they're kind of surprised that, oh, you mean back then they thought like this and now we think like this because I am actually influenced by what the world is thinking. They seem to be shocked by that. All right, so it was postmodernism, and does truth exist? And if I recall, in that particular lesson, there were two ways to determine what is moral.
Okay.
Right? Do you remember? Moral. They both began with the letter C.
Yeah, correspondence model or correspondence theory of truth, and then coherence model of truth.
All right, first of all, 6th to 12th graders, coherence and correspondent.
Didn't know how to spell it, but by the end of the night, they knew what it meant.
Yeah, but did they start throwing things at you? Hey, shut up with the big words,
no.
You jerk. No, they didn't. They were able to get it.
Yeah, and I told them last night, I said, if you guys walk out of here at least knowing what truth is, you will be far and above even what many adults know
that's
about
a fact.
What truth is.
That's a fact, because most adults don't know that truth doesn't reside in a warehouse. It's not found in a book. It resides in a person. Yeah. Jesus Christ is the truth. And our culture has figured out different ways to determine what they think is the truth. We all agree on it together, therefore it's truth. That's a piece of cake to undermine. And I think that particular lesson had two girls out on the university campus. So these girls, about 20 years old,
sure,
were asked by John Fabares, who hosts Road Trip to Truth, so 2 + 2 = 4, but I think it can be 5. No. It's got to be 4. All right. What about morality? Well, that's totally different. Culture decides. Well, there it is right there. Exactly the difference between coherence model,
yes,
and the correspondence model. They were revealing that they thought societies can determine what is right and wrong. And then what did John Fabares wisely ask them? He threw down the Hitler card.
He did. And it's like, oh, well, I mean, no, that's wrong.
Well, okay, they went about it the wrong way, is
yeah,
what the girl said. Hold on. They went about what the wrong way? Exterminating 6 million Jews. By the way, I just read something rather fascinating. Speaking of not recalling history, I didn't bring the article into the studio with me, but it was done by a Jewish organization that simply wanted to understand, what does society know about the Holocaust history? It was another... We're not teaching history at all. Because most people, I think the majority, I'm doing this from memory, but the majority of people believed that the Jews... A lot of people believed the Jews were responsible for it themselves, and that maybe 2 million Jewish people were killed, not 6 million... They really knew virtually nothing about Jewish history through the Holocaust. They couldn't name, I think it was in Texas, New York, and maybe Delaware, They couldn't name one concentration camp.
Or that the Nazis killed more than just Jews.
Most people don't know that either. Black people, homosexuals, anybody that wasn't the pure Aryan race. By the way, that's social Darwinism in action right there. Which, speaking of which, this is going to be next week. We're going to be in Los Angeles with Dr. John G. West of the Discovery Institute. He wrote Darwin Day in America. He is perhaps the leading authority on the influence of Charles Darwin, not only in Europe, specifically in Germany, but also in America in the 20th century, how social Darwinism has affected everything. And it's not just eugenics. That's the obvious one. It's not just racism. There's another obvious area. Retailing. Retailing has embraced social Darwinism. Fascinating book. We get to be with him for season two. We're going to be interviewing him on social Darwinism. That will be taught to 6th grade to 12th graders. And they can get this stuff. They're not dumb, these kids.
Oh, they're not ready for that, Todd.
Oh, we got to turn up the jam or pump it up the music. Whatever it is these days. You got to make it fun. It's got to be whoop-de-doo. Now, last night, as you were making your way through this, there are four segments. The fourth one is a little bit shorter, but it's always a gospel presentation that I got to tell you, they're all so refreshing because it's not. So if you've just watched this conversation about the coherence model of truth and you'd like to ask Jesus into your heart, what? Where did that come from, preacher? No, it's thoughtful and it segues beautifully, and y'all didn't even have time for it.
We didn't.
Because you got into conversations about things. But even though the class time was up, you said it's time to go, everybody. But if you want to stick around and watch the last segment.
At this point, this is where you see youth get up, get on their cell phones, ready to leave and walk out the door and start chit-chatting. We said you can leave, but we're going to play this last segment. It's about 4 to 5 minutes. Stay if you'd like. And every single student and some of their parents who were ready to pick them up stayed and watched it.
So cool.
Yeah.
Now that I'm tooting the horn on this thing. It's really good. It's really good. I know. Maybe my intelligence level, I get the same SAT score as a sixth grader, but I've seen this thing constantly because that's what we did for the last year. And I never get bored watching it. It's fresh and it's tight and it's cool enough. It looks like it doesn't look all grainy and third rate and poor segues and film. It's just hip enough. It doesn't have fireworks and pyrotechnics, but the kids are digging it. And you will too. It's going to be available November 1st. Can't wait for you to see it. It is, I'm hoping thousands of youth groups will incorporate this. Thousands. This could be a game changer. Not just with the number of kids who hear it, the number of kids who get saved, and maybe, just maybe, altering the way that we do youth groups. It does not have to be dopey. It does not need to involve peanut butter and whipped cream. Kids can get this stuff. Now, if you would, Mike.
Yep.
Some of the questions. Where did the kids press in on this one? Because typically that's what happens.
Yeah, so one really big question got brought up last night, which was when we were talking about can all of us be right at the same time? Was, let's just imagine that there is a gentleman who grew up in a Muslim family, and all his life he grew up underneath the Islamic faith, and he really believed that that was true. How do we know his truth is not true and our truth is our truth? Why can't we both live in the same world and both believe what we want to believe?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here talking to him. He had a black shirt on. I said, okay, but if I really, really, really believe that your shirt's red, does that mean that I'm right? Or am I wrong? And he's like, well, you'd be wrong because it's black. I'm like, but I really, really, really believe it. And I firmly hold that. And he's like, yeah, but you're still wrong. I'm like, and see, that's why we need missions and evangelism and sharing the gospel, because there's people out there
that are wrong. Yeah. This young man, and I suspect I know which one you're talking about because I saw him last week.
Oh,
engaging fully on this, totally digging this. That means junior high and high school kids, they're already drinking this Kool-Aid. The postmodern pressure, it doesn't start in university. It happens in youth. It happens when they're young. And your kids are getting it right now. And they're getting it from every single source of media, whatever they put into their earbuds, whatever their eyes land on, they are getting the world system's message. And Road Trip to Truth, it just confronts it respectfully, intelligently. And I wish it were available right now, because I would beg you to get it, but you're just going to have to wait till November 1st. Todd, could you just try to practice some self-control on occasion? I could, but I'm not going to, because I'm telling you, our kids need this kind of stuff. And if you're teaching the youth and you're dumbing it down, I would respectfully say to you, like I would to a Muslim overseas, you're wrong. This is Wretched Radio. As you travel the globe, you're bound to bump into some Christians who don't own a Bible.
Some of the people that we work with through Bible League have never looked at the face of a clock. They've never answered a cell phone. They just simply cannot access a Bible. There's no Christian bookstores. It's a big deal here in America to go to even a discount retailer, right, and find a Bible. But that's not the case.
That can be changed. All over the globe, millions of Christians right now are praying for Bibles, and we can get them into their hands courtesy of Bible League International for $5 per Bible. Remember, they teach them. They don't just zip a Bible at them and then run to the next village. No, they teach. Local churches being strengthened. $5 a Bible. How many could you send? Wretched.org/Bible. Wretched.org/Bible.
When I say gospel, you say partner. Okay? You ready? Here we go. Gospel? Can't hear you. Let's try it again. Gospel? Hello? Is this mic on? Try it again. Gospel? That's right. My fault. My bad. I'm sorry. This is radio, so I can't actually hear you respond. But here's what I'm trying to say. When you become a gospel partner, you're helping Wretched spread the good news to people all across the world. See, every dollar you give is carefully stewarded away. If you're already a gospel partner, then let me tell you how extremely grateful to you that we are. We can't do what we do without you. And if you're not a gospel partner already, would you prayerfully consider becoming one? To become a gospel partner, just visit wretched.org/donate, or to make it easier, you can text wretched to the number 44321. That's wretched.org/donate, or text wretched to the number 44321.
The Eastern Orthodox Church retains control of 80% of the population in Eastern Europe, and according to Paul Marty of Tomorrow Clubs, that ain't a good thing.
People are terrified that if they somehow cross their Orthodox priest, that he's not going to bless them. And their blessing is so important in their culture. They won't do funerals, they won't do weddings, they won't, right, you know, they won't bless the home if they aren't behaving. They really exert a lot of control over the lives of the people.
Tomorrow Club's changing that statistic, opening up hundreds of weekly kids' meetings. They're called Tomorrow Clubs. The kids get loved on, they hear the gospel, and they learn they don't have to fear pastor and God. It's a magnificent ministry. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? Just $30 a month for 30 little disciples. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the bread of life. Just as God gave life to his people in the desert by providing manna, so Jesus gives life to his people through his body broken on the cross, which we remember in the breaking of the bread in communion. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's go talk about the book we all read.
We already did that. This is Wretched Radio, but I do have for your consideration not one but four books you might want to use with your kids regarding the subject of gulp pornography. Many people have asked, how do I talk to my kids? How do I prepare my kids? How do we deal with this subject? Is there a book? Well, it appears that there is. This happens to be a review of four different books from one Calvin Gallagher at Reformation 21, citing a statistic that is horrifying. In 2019, the internet's largest porn site, which is, I'm not even going to say the name, received 42 billion visits. Oh, man, Scylla. Who is going to that website? Sit down, Mom and Dad. You could get staggered with this one. The average age at which people first are exposed to pornography is, drumroll please,
when they get a cell phone.
11. 11 years old. I want us all to drink this in for a moment. I want you to think about what an 11-year-old looks like. What would that be, fifth grade?
Yeah.
11 years old? All right, last night you were with 6th to 12th graders. So just think about the face of the 6th graders that you saw. Think about a 6th or 5th grader in your church or in your home, those sweet little faces that are so naive, that are so unable to handle adult things. At 11, these images somehow are making their way into their eyes. And these are not kids that are necessarily seeking it out. It finds them. Sin is like water. It just can't be contained, and it will make its way into any crack. And I'm not suggesting for a second that the kids in your youth group, they're these lusty hound dogs that are like, I want to get out of this glass so I can just turn on my porn. No, it found them. It found them, and it perhaps grabbed them. And they're having to wrestle with these things at such a sweet and tender age. Think about the devastation that is being wrought on a generation of kids. They can't handle it. What makes an adult? Knowledge. What they know. When you start to be exposed to adult things, and there's more than just intimate issues, there are many more issues. That's what makes you an adult. And we recognized historically that you're not able to handle all of those things at a particular age. And that's why you remain a child. We teach kids progressively what they need to know based on what they can handle. 11, they're seeing filthy images. Ooh. Here are the books. 1, tips for talking to your kids about sex. Tips for talking to your kids about sex. Please note, it is a secular book, and yet according to this review from Reformation 21, it does align with biblical truths. But you need to know it is secular. It offers suggestions for talking to kids of different ages, from toddlers learning to talk to teens heading for college. Some people wonder, when do I start talking to my kids about these things, according to this book, when they're a toddler? No! Yes, because if you don't, somebody's gonna, and it doesn't, these kids are gonna, they're gonna talk about it amongst themselves. The adults are in the other room having a Danish and a cup of coffee, and they're in a playroom, and you think, well, there's everything is just well with the world. I can hear the little thing above the crib, so nothing could be going on in there. Yes, it could. We need to start early. At appropriate levels, we give them appropriate information. It is a dialogue that takes place to help you dialogue with your kids. Well-researched, it deals with kids what they're likely to confront. This list is fascinating. Sleepovers for 8-year-olds. Tim Challies would say he got into so much hot water for this. Do you remember when he blogged about not allowing his kids to do sleepovers?
Yeah, I recently was reading about that.
Oh!
They got a lot of slack from parents.
8-year-olds? Oh, yes. 8-year-olds. Not my child. Your child maybe isn't the instigator, but they're the receiver. And they get dragged into these things or conversations or images or, hey, look at this, or did you know about that? There was, gentlemen,
here, present.
There was an email that we received here, an idea at wretched.org. This was an individual who is a school bus driver, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I remember which one.
Find that email, because you're going to hear this and you're going to go, what? What? First grade? You're kidding me. No, not kidding. Dealing with sleepovers for 8-year-olds, puberty for 12-year-olds. Sexting for 14-year-olds, and the complexities of relationships for 17-year-olds. I just love that it's staggered. It's not everything at once. It's not all the details. It's enough at their age. at appropriate points, specific suggestions for moms speaking to their daughters and dads speaking to their sons. That's an excellent formula. He writes, I especially appreciated the section on sexual integrity, which shows that these conversations can go beyond awkwardness and serve as inspiring calls to true manhood and womanhood. Ah, that is a good positioning of the issue and perhaps one that you need to consider. As opposed to, dirty bad. We don't want to do that. Sex is a gift. Intimacy is good. It was created by God, given to us to glorify Him. It's a good thing. But if we just use it to say it's bad, it's bad, it's dirty, avoid it, avoid it. What are we telling the kids? The wrong message. Instead, guess what? Son, I know you know about these things. And guess what? Son, when you move from being a boy to a man and you behave in such a way that a young woman is going to say, I will give my body to him, you will get to enjoy that. Strive for manhood. And I'm going to show you the way. That's a different way of phrasing it, isn't it? It's a different positioning of the issue that I think a lot of us could use. That particular book is called Tips for Talking to Your Kids About Sex. You got that email?
Yeah, Mike? I do. I got it in front of me. She was a bus driver and said, I overheard a first grader talking about having sex and a fourth grader asking her classmate to guess who she had sex with. And she was actually asking, can I continue working for public school systems without being complicit with the sexualization of children? Isn't that like being Hitler's secretary without killing any Jews?
No, it's not. No, it's not. You're not participating. You're not promoting. You're not aiding. You're serving the kids by transporting them, and you could be an influence and you can be salt. Now, the other point, a first grader was saying that. Let's hope it wasn't true.
A first grader with a fourth grader.
Let's hope that that is exaggerated, but they're talking about it. And I know for a fact that the bus alone can be a danger. I know it. And I'm not, if you're a bus driver, good on you. You're a Christian, good. Be salt, be light. But we need to know as moms and dads, because I remember this. This is one night, our two daughters, the eldest and the middle child, they were going to our local sweet little elementary school. We lived in the burbs. We knew a lot of the teachers. We knew where they stood on political issues. Many of them were Christians. And we felt it was safe because there was no indoctrination on sexual issues. Evolution wasn't being taught. And we felt that it was safe. One night, the girls, I believe it was at the dinner table, if not, if I recall, because this is so many years ago, it was in our family room. They're playing with toys, you know, like a dolly. Some sort of stuffed animal, some little child's thing. And one of them said, hey, Dad, what's a blank? I'm sorry.
What?
What? And my beautiful little daughter, my innocent, sweet child, used a word that I wouldn't use it today. I wouldn't use it with guys in the locker room. I wouldn't use it sitting around talking about guy things. It was that shocking. And where did we hear this word? You guessed it. It was on the bus. And that is when our kids no longer went on the bus. That decision was made pretty quickly. Your kids are going to get it. You better prepare them for it. Tips for Talking to Your Kids About Sex. It gets a thumbs up from Reformation 21. Second book, Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. A Simple Plan to Protect Your Young Minds. Focuses on teaching little children about porn. I thought this was a really good line. It teaches children a simple way to distinguish good pictures from bad pictures and a plan for what to do if they see them. Here it is. Turn, run, tell. Turn, run, tell. Turn the page or turn your face away. Run away from it and tell an adult. That's a good plan right there. That book is called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. Third book, Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, Porn Proofing Today's Young Kids. What a world we live in. We have to teach our children these things. It's more of a scientific perspective. That's a positive feature of the book. Please note, it can have some therapeutic perspectives, treating things more like a disease instead of a moral issue. Nevertheless, it gets a thumbs up. And finally, from a pastor, not if, but when. Preparing our children for worldly images specifically addresses girls in the first half and boys in the second half. That one is called Not If, But When. Preparing our children for worldly images because they are going to get hit by them. Four books. You pick whichever one you think would be best. Get one, get them all. But get into the game and get into a conversation with your child. Sadly, no matter what age they are. What a world. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.